E4E is brought to you by the University of Delaware Partnership for Public Education. In an effort to increase the availability and accessibility of UD expertise to Delaware's P12 educators, leaders, and policy influencers, we have invited faculty members from the University of Delaware's 9 colleges to share their research. We hope you enjoy today's critical conversation and consider ways you might be able to leverage relevant research and UD expertise to advance policy and transform practice.
Today, we're diving into the world of STEAM, science, technology, engineering, art, and math, and the incredible educators who make it come alive. We'll explore how research-based engineering studies are helping prepare the next generation of problem solvers and what educators can do to better support students as they take on real-world challenges. We'll also shine a spotlight on a groundbreaking new collaborative project that's transforming engineering education and building a stronger STEAM ecosystem for K-12 students right here in Delaware. So let's jump in.
Today, we are here with Dr. Jenny Buckley, who's a professor at the School of Engineering. And thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Jenny Buckley. How are you? And could you tell me briefly about what your role is at the University of Delaware?
Yeah, my name is Jenny Buckley. I am a mechanical engineer by training. I'm also a proud Blue Hen, so I'm a graduate of University of Delaware Mechanical Engineering as an undergraduate. I'm also a proud Delawarean and graduate of our public schools. I came back to Delaware after my graduate training to teach mechanical engineering. So I'm a professor here in the Department of Mechanical Engineering. And I am also proudly affiliated with the School of Education here at University of Delaware, where my focus is on engineering education, specifically as it relates to product design and the engineering design process, and also broadening participation in engineering.
Oh, yeah, thank you so much for all the introductions. Yay, go Blue Hen.
Go Blue Hens.
Yeah. First of all, I want to know more about engineering. I bet many people also think engineering is something only for scientists or engineers in a small lab with their lab coats on and with glasses. So could you explain what an engineer does?
Sure. Yeah. I think, you know, that perception is definitely something that we as engineers need to work together to combat, right? Because I think there's this image that we are very, very focused on theory, maybe a little uptight, maybe a little rigid and not creative. And that could not be further from the truth. So engineering, my favorite definition of engineering, is the application of math, science, and technology to solving the world's most important problems in a systematic way. Those problems kind of fall into 4 buckets, and this is true for all of the different engineering disciplines. Healthcare is definitely one. We want to make sure that we have, you know, really good technology that is solving problems. We want to make sure that it is affordable, right? And that we can get it out to people who really need it, not only in our own country, but across the world. The second category is environmental. So, you know, obviously we have caused some environmental problems, and we as engineers have a big part in that. We have to take responsibility for that in cleaning up those messes. And that is not just the role of environmental engineers, that's also the role of every other discipline as well. The third category is security. And I think there's, you know, there's the traditional view of security, which is like, you know, defending our country and this sort of thing, which, you know, for sure, right? You know, a lot of military technology, but there's also security in terms of like personal security, particularly as it gets to, you know, your private health information, your own finances, right? There's a lot of technology behind that. And that's where we have our electrical engineers, our computer engineers, our computer science folks. And then the last category is sort of a catch-all, but I think it's where a lot of engineers work. It's called joy of living. And that's everything that's sort of non-essential for living. If you really think about it, it may not feel non-essential, but things like air conditioning, right? It could be things like the coffee machine that you used in the morning and the tennis shoes that you're wearing, right? The car that you drove in, like all of those things, your iPhone and your digital technologies. Yes. So those are more centered on keeping us comfortable, keeping us happy. So that's the joy of living category. So those are what we call the grand challenges of engineering, healthcare, environment, security, and joy of living. The last part of the engineering definition is really about how we tackle these problems in a systematic way. That is called the engineering design process. It's about identifying a problem, coming up with multiple solutions for the problem, picking the best of those options and building it out, and then testing it. And then you go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth to get something that actually works. So that process is what really differentiates us from a lot of the other fundamentally creative disciplines. As an engineer, we train our students and we train ourselves in this sort of philosophy that allows us to move the needle. And even if the process fails, which it very frequently does, right? A lot of times you're not getting to an endpoint, you're learning something along the way. And that's one of the hardest lessons you learn as a young engineer, is that this process doesn't always lead to a quote unquote successful product or process, but it does contribute to the body of knowledge that will eventually lead to that. So anyway, that's a very long-winded explanation for what an engineer does. A mechanical engineer, mechanical engineering is the biggest and the broadest of all the engineering disciplines. Mechanical engineering represents about 40% of the engineering workforce. So we're sort of everywhere. Wow. And what we do is we apply a lot of physics and basic math and computer technology and prototyping technology to creating products or processes that make products. So any physical thing that you interact with in the world has a mechanical engineer behind it. And that's kind of cool because it gives you a lot of room to specialize.
Is there any like everyday objects that I might not know that mechanical engineering was applied?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, just like looking around our Zoom screens right now. So all of the physical parts of your phone or any of the technology that's sitting in front of you, if you're listening to this podcast, right, your earbuds, all of that, a lot of that physical design, the physical embodiment of it was designed by a mechanical engineer. The processes to make those products, other stuff, you know, I see a picture frame in the background, right? Simple, but that was us. You know, tennis shoes, coffee cups, cars, right? That's very classic, is I call it planes, trains, and automobiles. But, you know, things that go vroom are all mechanical engineering. Pretty much any physical product that is not heavy on electronics, every physical embodiment is really mechanical engineering. So yeah, a lot of physical stuff. That's what we do. That's why we're 40% of the workforce.
That sounds so amazing. And I've actually never imagined that security or joy of living could be related to mechanical engineering. But yeah, wow. Thank you so much for all the
Of course. Yeah, we're secretly behind everything we touch, really. Just working in the background there.
Yes, the true heroes. So I know that your work focuses a lot on inclusive education and adopting different initiatives to really promote the next generation's mechanical engineering careers or education. Mm-hmm. And for example, PERI initiative. Could you tell me how it started and like, why did you start that initiative and what was the motivation for that?
Sure. So my background coming up as a mechanical engineer was very traditional, right? So here at University of Delaware, mechanical engineers, we study, it was a pretty homogeneous group. I went off to grad school. I went to Cal Berkeley, another big engineering sort of powerhouse, very traditional there as well. After I graduated from Cal with my PhD, I went over to, there's a medical school in San Francisco, University of California, San Francisco. I did a postdoc in orthopedic surgery, which allowed me there to start to create devices using my mechanical engineering background, create new devices and test existing devices that are used in orthopedic surgery. Orthopedic surgery is very much like mechanical engineering. So just to put some numbers out there, there are fewer than 15% women in mechanical engineering. So here at Delaware, I'm really proud to say that we're coming in at about a quarter women graduates from our program, which is very, very hard earned. And our women happen to be some of our best students year in, year out. But that's not a very diverse population in terms of students from historically non-traditional backgrounds, students of color. So I was running a lab at San Francisco General Hospital. And what I noticed was that there was a lot of talent that was sort of from these underrepresented backgrounds, women, people from historically underrepresented groups, but it was hard to find, and it took a concerted effort to make those opportunities available to people. And that really got me thinking about how lucky and kind of miraculous it was for me to be where I was at. You know, I don't come from a family of engineers. My parents were both educators in the public school system in Delaware. Their teaching careers, they had a second career in a bookstore. So they owned a small independent bookstore.
That's a dream.
So, yeah, exactly. It's also a ton of work, let me tell you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a ton of work. But it was great because I grew up in a bookstore, but, you know, never was engineering really mentioned. And I liked building things. I liked figuring out how things worked. I loved physics and math. Wow. And I was really lucky that I had a physics teacher who happened to be a woman. She was like, I think you're an engineer. I think you should go off and be an engineer. And I didn't even know what that was or what my options were. But if it weren't for her kind of seeing what my talents were, I don't know where I would be, right? So anyway, that got me thinking about how do I provide that opportunity, or my obligation to provide that opportunity for others. And I was working with a surgeon at the time. Her name is Lisa. And Lisa had kind of a similar background to mine, public school education, similar, like there was somebody in her life, actually Jacqueline Perry, for whom we named the organization, one of the first women orthopedic surgeons in the country. So that was the inspiration for the Perry Initiative. And we started really small. So the idea was, let's bring some girls into my lab at the time, my biomechanics lab. Let's show them what we do. And I did not have a set curriculum at that point. There was not a learning objective in sight. But the idea was like, okay, here are a bunch of women who love doing what they're doing. Here's some cool technology that you may not have seen. And, you know, we started in 2009 with 15 girls who were in my lab for, you know, 3 weekends, which is way too long to have 15 high school girls in your lab.
Oh, high school students.
High school girls. Yeah. High school young women who, I mean, now are, you know, off in their careers. And then we were lucky that we got paired very early. We got some startup funding from industry, and we were paired with an organization called Project Lead the Way, which is very big in engineering education. And they were sort of like a big sister nonprofit to us. Mm-hmm. And they helped us set up the business, scale up. You know, there's a lot of help from the orthopedics industry. Perry Initiative over that time from 16 years there grew from 15 girls at one site in San Francisco to over 2,000 per year doing these hands-on outreach programs at close to 50 different sites. We have 20,000, as of our latest census, 20,000 young women have been through our outreach programs, both high school women and women in med school. We definitely contributed to the rise in the percentage of female orthopedic surgeons from 14% in 2009 to 22% at present. So that's a huge jump, right? So 8 percentage point jump.
Yes.
And, you know, we got the numbers. We can track exactly, you know, who was in our programs and who made it all the way through to becoming a surgeon, which is beautiful.
Wow, that sounds wonderful. Because I'm from South Korea, and I believe like usually there are 3% of like orthopedic students in medical schools.
Yeah. I mean, you know, internationally, I think that's also really interesting, right? So I know the Perry Initiative has been getting some inquiries about, you know, how do we take this model that's worked in the US and, you know, work with other countries and other ecosystems to also broaden participation. I think there's a lot of opportunity too with other folks who are historically underrepresented in these fields. So specifically, we have found that there's a group of individuals, a lot of them women, right? And people who are thinking about going into perhaps biology or pre-med, who become interested in engineering, mechanical engineering, bioengineering, because they see what they can do to create medical devices and help patients in that way. So there's an opportunity to pull in students who may not have been thinking engineering at the K-12 level through curriculum that traditional K-12 curriculum providers aren't thinking about, through applications that they aren't thinking about.
I totally get it. I did not like physics class in high school. But now when I think about it, it's just everywhere and so important to know the basic physics.
Yeah. But if that basic physics is always delivered to you as like, I don't know, planes, trains, and automobiles, right? One thing I absolutely refuse to participate in ever is an egg drop. Like that has been done, like, you know, I think by the time kids graduate high school, they've done the egg drop design challenge probably like 10 times.
For sure. So, you know,
how much better to teach physics maybe through the lens of like one of the lessons that I designed with my research education research partner, who's conveniently also my wife, is it's very convenient, let me tell you, is teaching some physics concepts related to forces through the lens of a mountain climber who is hanging onto a rock, right? So what type of grip should they be using to secure themselves to the climbing wall? Things like that, right? Like that's for me, that's far more interesting than like, okay, let's design a mousetrap car or whatever other experience we're using to illustrate a physics concept.
Yes. Okay. So tapping into like those kind of educational perspectives, I wonder how students who were in your class or who went through these initiatives felt about physics or engineering or science curriculum. So could you share some reactions or responses from students?
Yeah. So my focus here at Delaware in the Department of Mechanical Engineering is really centered around hands-on design. I also teach some just very classic mechanics courses, but we don't just teach how to do those 3D models on a computer and create dimension drawings, which is the classic approach. We teach that, but then we also teach how do you physically make it? Who's involved in the making? Mm-hmm. How do you evolve the design through thoughtful engineering processes, right? Not just sort of like, okay, I'm going to hit a button and print this on a 3D printer. So that involves people other than me as well. So here at Delaware, we have several other people who help the students equally as importantly as I do with learning. Everything is done as a group. We don't work individually as engineers in the field. We're typically part of a team. So by making sure that your learning environment initially to gain these hands-on skills is very inclusive, very growth-oriented, and you're giving people the time and the space to learn that at their own pace, not in a public or a competitive setting necessarily.
Have you had junior high or high school students in the lab, like for a visit or for a project?
Yes, for sure. And, you know, we love having them there.
What do you do with them?
Same thing I do with my freshmen a lot of times. But what we do bring in students and show them around and have activities, like the only way we're going to get back to that number, right? 125,000 mechanical engineers a year. The only way that we're going to affect that is if we work with teachers and work at a scale that's bigger than, you know, I invite students into my lab.
Yeah, I get it. But your lab looked amazing. I wanted to spend all day long. Yes. And okay, so in terms of school teachers, have you collaborated with school teachers who do not have any engineering background? Because like sometimes I feel like our audience might be thinking, oh, okay, this all sounds interesting, but I'm not an engineering teacher and I don't have the toolkit to incorporate any of this information into my class. So any response to that? Like any ideas, thoughts?
Yeah, totally, totally. So we've done a few things here at Delaware, and I'm just going to put in a plug for our center here at Delaware that focuses on engineering education. It's called E-Cubed, and it's out of the College of Engineering here at Delaware. E-Cubed stands for Engineering Education Ecosystem, and it's a collection of characters. Myself, my colleague, Haritha Malati, who's a professor in civil engineering, who teaches our introductory course across all the engineering disciplines. And then, you know, we have education experts, Dr. Headley, Dr. Trout. We also have practitioners and people from other disciplines. So if you're listening and you want to get involved, please do reach out to me. We also have a website that's up, a bit of a scaffold at the moment. But the idea with E-Cubed and what we have done in the past with E-Cubed has existed since 2001. There's basically two arms. So one arm is what can we do for teachers in Delaware, you know, our own community. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple things. First, we can provide professional development experiences for teachers. Right now, we're focused on high school and middle school with a little bit more on the high school side. You do not need to be an engineering teacher to participate. You don't even need to be STEM necessarily, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea there is come attend one of our workshops. One of them that was very popular and we hope to restart is called Design of Design. Okay. So that's sort of meta, but what that is, yes. how can we familiarize teachers with the engineering design process and empower them to create their own design experiences in their classrooms? And we explicitly say things like, you cannot design an experience that is things that go vroom. So no planes, trains, or automobiles, or rockets, no egg drop, no bridge building. What can we do? And of course, we give some examples and there are some challenges that people can walk away with that we have designed. But even bigger than that is, okay, you're a physical science teacher at a Title I school, yeah, and you want to design an engineering experience that's going to be relatable for the kids in your classroom. How can we give you some skills and some framework in order to do that?
So awesome.
It's like a 4-day workshop. At the end of it, teachers walk away with the stuff that we've built. And they have their own experiences working with that. But then more importantly, they have their own lesson that they've designed that works in their classroom, that's affordable for them, all of those things. So that's one piece is the PD. The other piece is if you want one of us, God forbid, to talk to, you know, a lot of the districts have a STEM advisory board or some of them that have career and tech ed engineering programs or computer science programs. We can match you with a professor to sit on your advisory board or speak with your teachers. So that's another piece of it. And then the third piece is, you know, setting a non-competitive, non-trains, planes, and automobiles design competition for high school students, where the semifinalists from that competition come to University of Delaware and present as part of the mechanical engineering department here. We have a big showcase every semester. So those are all the college kids at various levels showing off what they have done on their projects. And we have a group of high school teams that are there as well. So that's the one arm that's focused on our community. The second arm is a bunch of us here at Delaware who are in practice as engineers and also teaching engineering at the college level. We have curriculum that we want to freely share with K-12, also with our fellow higher ed engineering educators, and we're building out a database and, you know, everything downloadable, everything nice and tightly packaged of curriculum that people can look up and say, hey, I want something that's medical themed, that's appropriate for a middle school math class. Okay, well, I can give you something for that, right? So that's also what we're doing. And it's, I've got folks, a colleague of mine in material science, Dr. Sheldon Hewlett, he has created a really nice material science exercise for, it could be middle, it could be high school classrooms. So it's things like that that we want to get out into the world. And that's sort of what's coming next out of E-Cubed is getting that out there.
Yeah, that sounds truly innovative and exciting for everyone. I'm excited.
Good.
Yeah. Good. Okay. For junior high, middle high, high school students too, engineering could be beneficial to them, but they might not, you know, become engineers necessarily. And we don't want everyone to be engineers.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. We don't. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like you don't have to be an engineer to have good impact. We know that.
Yes.
You know, we need all kinds of people.
But like, why do you think learning about engineering could be beneficial for kids?
I think there's a STEM literacy component, right? There's like, okay, well, I should know what an engineer does, just like I know what an electrician does or an accountant, or, you know, like you should just have exposure. Kids should just have broad exposure to all of these different disciplines. The other part is sort of the philosophy of it, right? Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of lessons to learn, even if you're not going to be an engineer, about engineering in and of itself. First is that I think, you know, math and science can be applied to do something. They're not these abstract skills that, you know, we just teach you to torture you. You can actually use them to do things. The second is that engineers try, fail, and try again. So there is so much failure involved in engineering, way more failure than success. And that is part of the process. It is part of growing. It is part of getting to a solution. The third skill is really engineers are kind of organized and methodical. And that's also just good to be exposed to, even if you don't want to be an engineer, right? Like, let's have a process for coming up with a solution or thinking about things from different perspectives. And that's what we're really good at.
I'm a French illiterature, actually.
Nice.
Yes, but when I think about physics, like there's something related to it, and like math too, and just the basic philosophy, just like you mentioned. So that really resonates.
It makes me so sad in my heart that people don't like physics more. I'm going to go off a little bit, but the way we teach it is very dry sometimes, especially if you're a striver, right? Like, okay, this is this thing, this hurdle that I have to get over to get to college, med school, whatever you want to do. So that's not fun to begin with. It's really a fundamental, like I am a firm believer in physics first, meaning maybe we should be teaching that in ninth grade, incorporating more of it in physical science without all the math as a framework. And some teachers do that really well. Like you don't need all of that math right away to understand physics principles. And okay, you know, you have another physics in senior year that's an elective, but can we not make physics so scary? So that's a whole other topic, but.
Yes, of course. Yeah, thank you so much. And I have one more question. A lot of schools feel like they don't have enough resources to implement engineering education in their schools. Do you have any recommendations or suggestions to do meaningful engineering projects or teaching without a huge, big budget?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So you definitely don't need a 3D printer, a laser cutter, all this stuff in order to teach engineering and to teach engineering well. I mean, a 3D printer is nothing but a hot glue gun that is on a little robotic head. Like, and also just to put it out there, teachers, it's a tool. It's a tool for early prototyping, but it is not what we use as engineers to make final products. So it is just as good in a lot of instances for the kids to mock something up in foam core and glue it together to make a 3D object, right? Or mold it out of clay and found objects. The 3D printer doesn't make the experience. What makes the experience is producing something physical to go along with a well thought out plan. So if you take that perspective on it, you can design experiences that are going to work in your classroom with whatever your budget is. So for example, we do have a lesson that I use one that, again, Dr. Trout and I came up with. It's published in The Science Teacher. It is about self-donning surgical gloves. So all you need to run this activity is a pile of crafty junk and a box of gloves. So the idea is this works in middle school, but it also works really well in high school. So non-latex gloves are going to cost you $10 a box. And then all the crafty stuff you can get from the art teacher, put it on the table. The story is as follows, and this is a real design challenge. Okay. Nurses in the operating room need to put on their own sterile surgical gloves very quickly and maintain a sterile field. That's a very tricky thing to do if you're putting them on yourself, because the way that those gloves are packaged is for somebody to put the gloves on somebody else, specifically for a nurse or a surgical tech to put them on the surgeon or the medical provider, right?
Yes.
They're not designed for them to put it on themselves, which is an issue of perspective, right? So nobody thought about the first person to put these on, which is problematic. But how can we make it easier for this person to put these gloves on? And there's really these really great videos. We always started off with showing a video of this nurse who's doing all these convoluted steps to get these gloves on. So that's what we're talking about, looping back, like design of design. So this professional development that we've done with local teachers, where let's make sure that whatever you're solving is a real problem, not a popsicle stick bridge. And it is something that works in your classroom, on your budget, with the equipment that you have available. So, you know, we have that. And then on the other side of the house, for schools that have all of the resources in the world, 3D printers and saws and drills and all this kind of stuff, we have curriculum that works for them as well. So that's really what the E-Cubed teaching portal is going to provide, our access to these lessons, some of which are already out in the public sphere. And then what we're hoping is this empowers more people to create this kind of curriculum and get it out in the world, right? Yeah. So like it's also going to be a platform for other colleagues and other people to put stuff out there. So
yeah.
We're going to put Delaware on the map for cool engineering curriculum that is not egg drop.
Yeah.
Keep mentioning egg drop. Don't do egg drop, teachers. Stop with the egg drop.
That sounds so exciting. And like also important for making physics not scary.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's our other motto for today. Make physics not scary, please.
Yes. Okay. So thank you so much for talking with us today, Dr. Buckley. I really appreciate it. Anything else you would like to add?
Everybody, like, let's go out there and build engineers, right? Let's build some more engineers. That's actually our department motto, is we build engineers. And the build part is all about growing, right? Mm-hmm. So I really want to encourage teachers that see kids in their classrooms that don't fit that mold right away of being an engineer. You know, my stepson, you know, even from a young age, I was like, this kid's going to be an engineer, right? Like, just say it, right? But I think we need people to recognize in their own homes, in their own classrooms, that it might be that kid that hates physics to start with and doesn't have all those experiences at home that you can spark in them an interest in your classroom, and they will contribute in ways. We need that broadening of people in the profession to keep making good ideas and make ideas for different communities. So like, it's super duper needed.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds wonderful. Yeah. And again, I really appreciate you being on the podcast today.
And that's it for today's episode of Evidence for Education. A huge thank you to Dr. Jenny Buckley for sharing her insights on how research-based engineering studies could bolster the next generation's STEAM learning. If today's discussion resonated with you, let's keep the conversation going. Share this episode and follow our podcast to stay updated on future conversations. You can find more details about today's episode, our guest, and additional resources from the University of Delaware's Partnership for Public Education in the show notes. Thank you for tuning in to E4E. We'll see you next time.